I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And we have the podcast Office Ladies. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories and lots of laughs.
Follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
What is up this year? Whoops, that was my wrong intro. Sorry.
We'll do it for you. What's up at 7-Eleven?
In a minute. First breakfast burrito started in Pacoima when a guy accidentally dropped his eggs on his wife's untouched flour tortilla.
Let's get into it.
Yo, welcome to another episode of In a Minute with Devin Lovett, coming to you live from the IAM studios in the heart of Los Angeles. And I am here with a couple of folks who reach the ears of Los Angeles almost every day. We are talking about Kevin Kline and Allie Johnson, better known as Kline and Allie, the morning show hosts from K-Rock. Thank you guys so much for being here. I am excited.
Thank you. We shot this episode when we were also the 23rd most successful show in LA, but you never aired it because that was pathetic sounding, and now it sounds better, so thank you for having us back.
Yeah, we've totally let ourselves go.
Okay.
We look much worse now than when this is airing.
Yeah.
In all fairness, 23rd, I only saw as low as 16th. So I think
we were 23rd at one point. Yeah. I think when we took over, the situation was pretty dire over there.
Yeah.
And I think at one point they just stopped telling us the numbers because it got to a point where, like, I think we were beaten by like high school radio stations from like Riverside were beating us. And I was like, Allie, this is not good for our self-esteem. And eventually we were able to slowly turn it around.
Yeah. But they also tried to say, the numbers don't matter. Don't matter right now. It's you guys that matter. And then behind the scenes, they're like, we're giving them 6 months. If they can't fucking do it, it's over. But luckily, things started. It was a slow but sure process.
You know what's funny? I wanted to jump into this, and now we're getting right into it because it was pretty miraculous. Like, let's be honest. When I was growing up, K-Rock was everything, okay? And like, listen, no secret, I'm a hip-hop guy. I was Power 106, 92.3 The Beat at the time, all that kind of stuff. But you couldn't escape K-Rock. That was the culture-defining radio. That was a culture defining sound of Los Angeles, right? From Kevin and Bean, Loveline, all the things, right? And somewhere along the line, K-Rock's stock dropped and went down and down and down. And through no fault of your own, when you were there, how long have you been in K-Rock? 5 years?
Yeah, I mean, I was like, they would bring me in near the end. I could tell like the writing was on the wall. Things weren't going well when they started having me come in and fill in on Loveline for a while. So I would do some Lovelines here and there. I was doing a show with Allie in San Francisco. Yeah. And then they brought me in to do like afternoons at K-Rock. And I was like telling Allie the whole time, I think that there'll be an opportunity for us here. We just need to let it get worse enough that they have nowhere else to go but up. And then we'll finally make our mark. So luckily,
and I was like, I don't think I'm going to put any faith in this guy. I better figure out what my plan B is.
Yeah. Allie was taking the barista classes at the time. Yeah.
Had a lot of side jobs.
And you had worked together because you did, what was it called? Live with Kevin Kline? And
Kevin Kline Live. Yeah. And then
not Kline's choice.
Not my choice. I wanted to call it Allie's show, but they said, no, we're not doing that. And then, it was like the big brother the little brother of K-Rock up in San Francisco. It was a rock station.
Yeah.
And that was another one that was like on death's door.
Intercom Odyssey station as well?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and it was on life support, and we were able to turn that station around and get some success going. And then we got fired on Christmas Eve.
Don't be jumping. These are my talking points here.
Every story basically ends with us getting fired.
Sorry, this is just, we're used to it because this is what we tell our therapist.
Yeah, I thought this was therapy with Evan Lovett.
I thought every morning is therapy for you guys.
It can be.
It's a lot.
Here, first, I'm going to say a word from our new sponsor, and then we're going to really dive in.
Great.
By the way, check this out. Anybody who knows me knows that this is real. I love these. I eat these every freaking day. These are Copico. You guys ever seen these?
They're amazing. I actually learned about them from you.
Yes.
And I always think, because Evan always has this crazy amount of energy, and I've run into you around the valley a ton of times. It doesn't matter what time of day, I'm always like winded on fumes. And you're always like, hey, man, good to see you. And I'm like, what's going on? What's your secret? I was like,
Copico.
And he pulls it out.
So look at this. This is a true story, okay? I had seen these. These are real ones now. The traditional ones don't look like this. They're like little coffee candies. I remember seeing them, I want to say growing up, but probably when I was a teenager. They're in a different kind of package. They're individually packaged. They were in like a bowl.
Yeah.
I want to say a different Asian type of restaurants. That's at least my memory of it. And it was coffee flavored candy. Little did I know, this is actually coffee flavored candy with caffeine.
Oh.
each one of these has 40 milligrams of caffeine. Two of them is equivalent to one cup of coffee. And they're delicious because I like coffee flavored, you know, coffee flavored ice cream, coffee flavored whatever. But it's coffee flavored candy and they're delicious and they work. I did a little promo with them back last summer. And then ever since then, we've kind of partnered. It wasn't as smooth as I'm making it sound. But either way, thank you for sponsoring the show. And these things really work. Find your local liquor store. I haven't seen them at 7-Eleven. I see them at liquor stores. And honestly, I get
hey, you sold me. Can I have one?
Yeah,
get out.
Here, take it back. Everybody, Copico, take it back.
Evan's recipe is, in case you want to, he ate 75 of these a day. It's just how he gets the level of energy.
One an hour. No, 3 an hour.
Our show's going to be double time tomorrow.
Yeah, here we go. Let's load up.
Wow, you're doing them during the show. Let's go. Be careful. Sometimes people want to crush them up.
I'm going to snort a line of these later.
There you go. You got.
We're going to baby bird each other.
Yeah.
Okay.
Come here, Allie.
Okay, I like to go chronologically somewhat, but I think most important here is the K-Rock rebound, okay?
Crazy.
Because it's, and we're going to get to you guys, but the thing is, truthfully, and I'm being honest, terrestrial radio lost a lot of relevance. I mean, let's be honest, there's so many platforms, blah, blah, blah.
But everyone has to have a podcast these days, so, you know.
Seriously.
We're getting a lot more competition.
Yeah. You don't even need them.
One guy has a viral social media channel. Start the podcast.
Allie's got a minute. Okay.
Now I've got an hour suddenly.
Yeah.
So that took away from radio in general.
Sure.
But K-Rock also had some self-inflicted wounds throughout the years, some pretty big ones. I mean, kind of one misstep after another for a while.
Well, there were some leadership changes and
ownership, leadership.
Yeah, ownership, leadership. There was merging of companies and all of it kind of diluted the brand over time. And, you know, then a company that's trying to recoup a bunch of debt is also going to be cutting corners and cutting costs and staffing shortages and all that kind of stuff, which is the story of a lot of companies, right?
Right.
And then it became a new guy stepped in and he was going to kind of change the direction of K-Rock and make it a little more poppy. And there were a lot of changes that happened during that, what was it, 2 to 4 year period that really did a lot of damage.
And all when like COVID was happening, when all people really wanted was things they were familiar with, things they understood.
To be warm and cozy.
Like all, and so they're like, let's take this security blanket that's been a part of LA for, you know, 30 plus years and let's rip it away from people. And it was like as someone that was watching it that had no power, but was like watching it all happen, I was like, this has got to be a joke. Like, it's every single decision being made here is a bad decision followed by another bad decision followed by another bad decision. And I'm going like, is anyone like thinking this stuff through? Because like, I'm very low end there. I don't get like, I don't get to make any important decisions. But I'm like, just as a guy that grew up listening to K-Rock, what the fuck is going on here?
Yeah.
And then, so it's been great. You know, I mean, obviously that part sucked. But now everyone loves a good comeback story. And it's nice to be on the other side of it.
And then so now K-Rock has like the pop cultural relevance, LA relevance, but your guys' rebound is kind of what spearheaded all that, right? I mean, look, hiring Kevin Ryder back was a big deal, but you guys are the morning show. You guys are the anchor and you guys you didn't struggle at first. But
that's fair. That's a fair statement. We struggled.
There were some dark years.
So here's the thing that kind of amazed me. You guys had like a 4 year leeway until you started exploding all of a sudden. And first of all, that's a luxury in this day. And it probably didn't feel like luxury because, you know, of everything that was going on behind the scenes, it was probably like, well, I guess that's what we're going to go with.
Yeah. And I think a lot of shows, they give you 2 years, if that. Right. And if you don't start making some kind of a change, if you're not moving the needle, then they just basically pull the cord. And the one thing that I loved about K-Rock was that for many, many years, it was in cruise control in the right direction.
Yeah.
And, you know, Klein mentions Live 105 up in San Francisco. That was a station that was on the right path. And then it just took a jerk in this direction, followed by a jerk in that direction. And then pretty soon the wheels being jerked so often, the listeners don't know what the hell's going on anymore.
No.
So then for K-Rock to kind of get back on this path that everyone is so familiar with, it was like, oh, you know, to be a part of that story really felt like, a lot of pressure, but also, you know, he and I have been working together long enough where we felt comfortable that we could do a show that we felt proud of, that eventually, as long as they could leave the steering wheel in one place for long enough for us to change the trajectory, we would. And we finally did.
So was there a lot that went into leaving the steering wheel in place, meaning stability, but were you guys trying to change your formula? You're trying new things. How much of that? Or was it just like, we're going to stay the course. We believe in what we're doing. We believe in each other.
Yeah, that was the hardest part because you have so much noise, right? You have also all the listeners that are saying, you guys suck. You ruined K-Rock. Bring back our friends. We got that. You got to hear that a lot. Then you hear all the bosses that think they know better and they're telling you what you should be doing and what's, and, but then the nice thing is it was randomly little people over the years, not calling you a little person, but you're a part of the story as well, but random people over the years, that like were when there was no actual proof that we were doing well, would be like, I love, like, not only do I listen, but like, I am a passionate listener of the show. I like listen to it regularly now and I can't believe what's happening. And we started getting everything from like, you know, members of K-Rock bands, like Trey Cool of Green Day would be like, I listen, like, and it didn't matter because we were still failing on all possible ways.
Right.
But all of these people that actually seemed like they had their kind of ear on what was going on, we're into the show. And then we started getting some feedback from like regular people that didn't know our names, but they're like, I don't know who these people are, but the show's funny. I actually like it again. Like, I'm back to K-Rock for the first time in a while. Yeah. Or I got in a rental car and happened to just randomly have a radio on. And then we started seeing the passion. And it just felt like it just kind of, it was one of those things that we called it a 4-year slog before anything actually happened. But then it felt like it kind of exploded pretty quickly.
Listen, I want my production team to run this graphic. I'm going to send it over. When you see like your guys, it's right. There's this big graph. I think Variety or Hollywood Reporter, sorry. One of them ran it. There was a feature on you guys. Well, K-Rock, but it was heavily on you guys as well in like October, November of 2025, where you see like the ratings for your guys' show. And it's like 16. I didn't see it lower than 16, but again, I didn't get out the magnifying glass and look that close. But it's bottom, and then all of a sudden starts going up, and then it just shoots up.
Yeah.
So tell me, why did that happen? What was it that clicked?
Put up the graphic of me in the bathtub with the toaster. That was when we were at 16. Get that graphic up here, and then put that there.
Well, let's just hold on that for a minute.
Yeah, let's hold that right there. That's nice. That's right. It's a good picture.
Look, I think that we were always doing a show that we were proud of. Yes, we're always trying to be better. We're always trying to be a well-oiled machine. And yeah, things were a shit show behind the scenes for a while. It took us a while to get organized. And I think getting organized behind the scenes really did help the on-air product. But going to events, seeing people, talking to people, meeting people, all of that is a slow process to get to know people in this, you know, that are in our community and being authentic with them, reaching out to them, which is more than a lot of other shows will do. A lot of shows, especially ones that have been on for a long time, they're very out of touch with their listeners and don't really get, you know, out on the street anymore to really meet people and talk to people. And I think that's where, you know, people who found us felt like, okay, you're one of my friends. Like, I can hang out with you at a bar, and we would. And so it was like, you know, each event, we see more people. But it's not like the show 4 years ago sucked and now it's good. It's just that it took a long time for people to even discover.
It sucked a little bit.
It sucked a little bit, but I mean, we were always doing the best that we could.
Yeah, but we would do a couple things. Like, I was thinking about some like little moments that happened during that time. Like, we, when they started pulling Diddy's pictures off the wall at all of the Mel's drive-thrus, we like called them up one by one and we're like, hey, we know you have an open spot on your wall for a picture. We'd love to bring our picture by to put on the wall. And they're like, who are you guys? We're like, we're the morning show at K-Rock. They're like, and then they like ask, they're like, does anyone know who these guys are? And they're like, no. Like, look, we'll bring the picture. We'll have it framed. Will you put it up? And they're like, all right, what the hell? So like, we just started doing stuff like that. And then our picture is still hanging on the wall now. We've replaced all the Diddy pictures and Mel's. And we had a few, when In-N-Out got attacked by a Habit Alley, remember that happened?
Habit put up that trolling billboard that was like, sorry, In-N-Out, we're number one.
Yeah. And we were like, first of all, In-N-Out's the best. Everyone knows In-N-Out's the best. So like, we basically put up a billboard,
a response,
trolling their billboard, saying basically like, being number one is overrated. In-N-Out is always better. And then we signed it like your 11th most popular morning show or something like that.
And now that we're number one, Klein, not overrated.
Now that we're number one, not overrated, apparently. It's much better. But like, so we would do these little things and it was our way of like, you know, being the voice of the people.
Yeah.
Because that's, I think, what our job is.
And being underdogs, because we were.
Yeah, and when all the ICE stuff started, we kind of started this campaign, 10,000 Tacos for LA, which was like our way of being like, let's support all of these mom and pop taco stands, taco trucks that like people that are losing business and they're scared to go to work. And we started kind of this movement just within LA Taco picked it up. And I don't know if any of these things like
Those were all little shifts that all made a difference.
It all adds up. And it's also important because being in the community, I'm somebody that like, I like meeting people, shaking hands, saying hello. Every one of those interactions counts. And it's like in a county of 10 million people, a city of 4 million, but county of 10 million people, like you're like, oh, one, even 100, like you're not moving the needle, but you really are because it's that old cliche, like guess who I met today or guess who I saw, or they'll take a selfie or like, you know, or just being a nice person or a genuine, authentic person. I think something with both of you guys, Kevin, I've met more because again, I see him around, you know, our kids play Little League at the same place. We live in the same neighborhood. He's on the wall at Prince Street Pizza. I called Lawrence Longo and I was like, why is Kevin Klein on the wall and I'm not on the wall? What's going on here? But no, so that's true with the walls.
I put that up myself. That was, it used to be a Diddy picture there as well.
Oh, see, he told me you begged.
Prince Street had Diddy.
I begged a lot, a few times, a lot of calls of begging. But yeah, but you're absolutely right. It's meeting. I mean, Allie and I feel like we have a one-on-one relationship with just a lot of people, but it seems like it feels like a very personal relationship we have with our listeners. And I know that you've got obviously a ton of passion for you, and that's how it feels. And the thing about K-Rock is people have always wanted to love K-Rock. K-Rock is so, such a lovable brand, and it's been lovable. It just, they gave the people a reason to hate it. And they're like, they basically said, we're going to give you a reason to hate us. And now slowly and but surely, like, people came back and they wanted to root for K-Rock. And now it's cool because K-Rock is once again, you know, as you said, it's been reaccepted now. And I think that people also helps that all that vintage retro stuff from high school is cool again. So I think that it all helps it all. And so, look, we're just happy to be a part of it. Like, I don't think that, you know, had they put a different show in there, would they be sitting with you right now? Probably. But they went with us, so, and they couldn't find anyone better or cheaper. So here we are.
But I was going to say, you're both genuine and authentic. When I met you out there, Allie, we've only met a couple times, but you are who you are. And I think that that's most
important. I'm actually incredibly fake.
Well, then you're damn good at being fake.
Yes.
Total bitch.
I went to acting school for that reason.
I was telling my wife last night, I was like, especially in 2026, where people are dumber than ever, in my opinion, and we get more bad information than ever, I do feel people have a better radar than ever for authenticity and genuineness.
Yeah, so like, no, people have a good bullshit meter these days. I think that social media helps with that to kind of cut through. Like, you can see when someone's not being authentic very clearly on social media. But I think with our show, we've always been ourselves to a fault. I think it's kind of ruined some of our relationships.
See that whenever I'm doing, well, I was doing my research on you, and many times in articles or interviews with you guys talk about how your personal lives get not destroyed, but undermined.
Either with our significant others to make sure that we can talk about stuff, or it just happens. Yeah, and then there's some things that you're just saying, you're like, I can't believe I'm fucking saying this now, but this is my life. And then I think that's what people appreciate. And it takes a lot to get somebody to change a habit. You know, when someone has a habit of doing something every single day, it takes a while to build that, right? And build that trust that I'm going to commit. Even to think about a new show, is this just going to be a one season and done? Because I don't really want to invest. Right. Or is this going to be a show that's on for 10 years? I don't really know. So to get people to trust us and to make us part of their morning routine, it's a well-earned right.
You said something earlier, Allie. You said a word that like is part of the K-Rock ethos. And when I've done the history of K-Rock and all this kind of stuff, but underdog, like that's why even in the 80s when K-Rock was first really like planting the flag, like people loved that it was, yes, people love an underdog, but that's sort of like what K-Rock really represents. Scrappy, fighter, like, you know, not the word alternative, meaning like alternative music, but just like alternative viewpoints. And just like, and I think that that was an important way that K-Rock got on the map. And you saying that that was an element of bringing you guys back up from 23rd or 16th or somewhere in that range to number one, it was like you were fighting that fight again. And I think that your listeners appreciate that and recognize that. And that's really, to me, like what a big element of what K-Rock is about. Speak on that.
We're still fighting against the man daily. I mean, K-Rock's always been fighting against the man. And then at one point, I think K-Rock got, you know, I mean, in some ways became the man, right?
Because the corporate listen.
Right. That's what happens. Like, if it's not profitable, it's a fine line between being like, we're successful, but also we are fighting. I mean, even today we hear from the lawyers regularly. They try to stop stuff we're trying to do. We're trying to send a guy in our show through a car wash with his top down because he lost a bet and they're afraid he was going to be decapitated. So we offered to wear a helmet and they said that wasn't okay.
A lot of radio bits that, you know, were so successful, not that that specifically, but like things that were done in the 90s and 2000s, they just would never allow us
to do. So we have to do, we still do them now, and then we just deal with the lawyers after the fact, sadly. But yeah, it does still feel like it's us against, I mean, that everything we try to do, it's like a fight. We feel like we're not fighting for something, we're not trying hard enough. And I think that when you talk about, you know, the state of terrestrial old school radio, I think what ended up happening is you ended up getting people that got comfortable in their jobs and just didn't want to lose those jobs. Yeah. So they just played everything really safe. And the one thing that Ali and I've never done is played anything safe. I'd much rather be disciplined, get in trouble, be taken off the air, be fired, which has happened in multiple cities. But by doing it, by pushing the envelope, because at least the people listening feel like they're getting something more out of it. Whereas I think most of the shows, you know, that have to play by the rules of the FCC, they would so much rather err on the side of caution that it gets to be a little predictable. And I think that once things get predictable, audiences just look for what else is out there.
Yeah, and I also think that we don't feel comfortable being predictable, like as individuals. Like I don't think that if we were doing the same thing every single day or doing the same benchmarks every single day or doing the same watered down bullshit that most national shows are doing, then I think we would both want
to
die.
Yeah, they made us talk to a talent coach for a while that was like telling us, and this guy was like, oh, this is my playbook for Boise, Idaho, and it works in Boise.
This
and
works in Boston, and it works and in, you know.
I was like, well, we're not. That's exactly why it's not going to work in LA, because LA is different and K-Rock is different. And so respectfully, your idea sucks. And he was like, well, you're in 16th place, so what the fuck do you know?
Yeah.
And we parted ways with the guy. And I think that was one of the ways when we said we're done like doing that. That was like one of the first times we put our foot down. We're like, we're just going to do it our way.
And it sucked because at the time we didn't really have the right to put our foot down because we had no leverage. But it was just like, well, if I'm going to fail, I might as well fail my way.
As yourself.
Yeah. And I think that we have both. I think everybody on our show.
When you fail enough as yourself, you get used to it.
Yeah, exactly. You know? I mean, I've been rejected from every single part of this industry.
And dating.
Yeah, just every aspect of my life. So what's another one?
Sure.
But I think we've all felt like weirdos. Yeah. And I think K-Rock was the creation of K-Rock, was just a bunch of weirdos, you know, that just, hey, I want to play this shit that no one's ever played before. Or I'm just going to, you know, Jed the Fish was just such a famous, well-known weirdo. And he had the permission and the ability to be a weird guy. And I think that that's part of what we're bringing it back to, is that, you know, there's that authenticity and that weirdness that's just a little gritty and off.
Like moths to a flame or bums to a 7-Eleven parking lot.
Yeah.
K-Rock has always been the beacon of a place for weirdos to go and gather.
Side note, that word bums you just said, I just asked this the other day. I'm like, do people still say that? Not in the way of the politically correct. I'm not even saying that. I was like, are homeless people? Does anybody still call them like bums?
I think bums is a great all-encompassing word, because I have friends that are bums.
Yes,
and I don't think it's necessarily.
This guy's a bum. Yeah, and he's got a house and a car.
That's a bum, but he lives on the Venice Canal. So you're like, how does he afford that bum?
That's a great point. Okay, I want to go back how you guys got together. Now, Ali, you're a native of the Bay, right? It's San Jose. I saw Bay Area, but then somewhere along the line, I saw San Jose.
San Jose, born and raised.
Okay. And then, Kevin, you went to Syracuse.
Yeah.
But where are you from?
Shocking. D.C., baby New Year, Washington, D.C., big celebrity.
January 1st, right?
I mean, peaked. Born 8 minutes after midnight on January 1st.
Wow.
Made the news, and it's all been chasing that high ever since, man. Chasing that buzz.
Did you really make the news? You were one born that year?
Yeah, because my dad was also baby New Year 1950.
This
is like one of those, let's get into it. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you didn't know.
Long line of baby New Year's.
A long line of disappointing clients.
Wow.
So he was baby New Year 1950. Then I was born January 1st, 1980, a first baby in D.C. So that was a big story, because all the hospitals used to fight over who got more free diapers. I guess if you were the baby New Year, you got free diapers or something.
Yeah.
So that's probably where I got my gambling addiction from. And then, grew up in D.C., East Coast. But I always knew about K-Rock in LA from a young age. And I would always listen to like Loveline. And I don't remember this, but people would tell me that I would go to like high school or whatever. Clearly I was popular with the ladies, and I would regurgitate stuff.
You know, I got this hospital free diapers.
and then I would basically regurgitate stuff from Loveline. So basically redo Loveline to them. And then when I ended up at K-Rock in LA, all these people I hadn't spoken to were like, dude, you always said you were going to do that. And here I am. So be careful what you want.
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey wherever you get your podcasts.
Wish for.
Yeah.
Real quick, what was DC like as a kid? Don't spend too much time on it, but I don't know many people that
don't bore us too much with your story, no. Your origin story.
Like, DC, I'm curious, but I'm DC deeply curious.
A great punk scene. Like, I went to like a lot of punk shows, ska shows.
You
like
did? 930 I didn't
Club.
Know that.
Yeah, it was like, it was a great like alternative kind of ska, scene. But I always found DC to be very boring as a stuffy political place that I couldn't wait to get out of.
Why were your parents there? Were they in politics?
No. My dad was a lawyer. My mom was a teacher, and they just ended up there. But they were not in politics, but a lot of everyone else was. So there's like a lot of khakis, and I was like, "There's too many khakis. I gotta get out of DC." So I knew like the second I was legally able to leave DC, I was going to leave that area.
Yeah.
And then of course it's gotten like a lot better supposedly and nicer. Yeah. But at the time, I remember thinking to myself, "This is boring. I got to get out of this boring place."
I lived in DC for one summer. My girlfriend at the time had an internship with the Department of Justice. I worked for a public research firm, and I'd wear a shirt and fucking tie every day.
Yeah.
During the summer. Well, I got to walk in front of the White House every day, which I thought was really fucking cool.
Right.
But shirt and tie. And it was the biggest like happy hour culture. Like happy hour is a thing, but it was like every day regimented, like happy hour after work, like almost mandatory. Not just for me, but all the friends. It's like a happy hour culture. That's all I remember. And that, and you were supposed to like stay out of the Southeast like quadrant.
Right. Like, but LA is cool because people will talk about who they know and it'll be like, oh, I know the producer of this show, or I know Leonardo DiCaprio. And DC was like, I know the senator from Vermont.
I'm on this campaign.
Yeah. Like, it was like pork barrel spending with the tobacco industry. I was like, oh my God, I got to get out of here.
Ali, give me the San Jose breakdown, because from afar, not that afar, but afar, San Jose seemed like not a backwater, but a town. That's now turned, it started with the San Jose Sharks. They got a hockey team. And you're like, wait, what? They get a pro sports
team? Well, when I grew up.
And then it became like a city. And now the potential governor of California.
Yeah, I know. It's why it's actually taken a huge, it's had a whole identity change in the last 20, 30 years.
Yeah.
I mean, but when I was growing up, I grew up in San Jose. It was considered the suburbs of San Francisco, or it was just like residential, normal suburbia.
But it's
and there really
far.
Wasn't a lot
it's
going
not, it's
on.
It's not like next door to San Francisco.
No.
That's where I always get like confused with it, right?
Yeah. I mean, and I never had grown up going to the city or anything. We would always go to Santa Cruz. That was the closest thing as far as like where you were going to go for the day. But then my dad was a part of the tech boom, like the tech boom in the 80s, where it was like Memorex and Microsoft and all of these companies that were all of a sudden booming in Silicon Valley. And Steve Jobs was like a joke.
Steve Jobs is her dad, by the way.
That's
she
wanna, my,
she want to talk about that?
R.I.P.
It's a big fucking deal.
New dad. But my dad had like a library of C++ computer language books and all this shit. And it was like, this was his world was like, oh my God, computers, they're going to be the next big thing. And he was like learning to read computer languages and stuff like that. And so that was just where, but I grew up in just a regular kind of neighborhood. And then once I left, I went to college on the East Coast.
Where?
I feel like it's SUNY Purchase in New York.
Okay.
It's in White Plains. I went to
so
acting school out there.
You guys are both New York.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Educated.
And then I lived.
Could have dated Allie. Who knew?
Missed opportunity for that
damn.
Sexual tension.
Oh, such regret.
And then lived in Brooklyn for a couple of years, came back out. When I did, I stayed in San Francisco. But by then, the San Jose had completely changed.
Yeah.
I mean, it has become basically one giant tech campus.
Yeah.
And like Steve Jobs is God now. And it's just a completely different. And, then I hear my family members complain every day about how Silicon Valley is not the same and I want to get the fuck out of here. And even though none of them will ever leave. But I had always planned on moving to LA eventually, just because at the time I was heavily into acting, sketch comedy, improv. That was my whole world. Radio was really never on my radar. And then eventually I was like, I got to get down to LA. I got to try and make this happen. I started taking classes at the Groundlings. I had probably the worst year of my whole life, the first year I lived in LA. And then
it's a hard place.
It was
to be
fucking
new,
hard.
Man.
I saved up $5,000 going, it'll take me a couple months, but I'll find a job. And then after 3 months I was broke. I had no job. because every actor had every job that I already wanted, and they weren't going anywhere because they were like, well, I've got the best bartending job, you know, I'm not leaving it. So it was just desperate, desperate times. Finally, I kind of got on my feet, started driving for Uber and stuff. And then I started doing just like sketch videos with my friends, which eventually led to a job at Playboy Radio, which is where I met Klein. And then after 2 years, they called me and said, we want you to take this radio job in San Francisco. And I was like, I fucking just moved from there. So I went back and lived in San Francisco with Klein and started doing radio. And then
she's not going to brag about herself, so I'll brag for her. But one of her high profile jobs in L.A., because I know this is an L.A. show.
Yeah, of course.
She was a waitress at the American Girl Doll Cafe, and she was not allowed to serve humans. She was only allowed to serve their dolls.
I was allowed to serve humans. They were just little girls.
And she had a job where she would get yelled at by children because she didn't put enough lemonade in their doll cups.
They could pick lemonade or iced tea, or they could do Arnold.
So whenever we talk about our rock bottom moments in radio, I tell her, at least you're not serving, getting yelled at by a child because you overfilled their doll's lemonade.
Look, I think that the real rock bottom was when I was not asked to stay at that job. I wanted to keep that job.
Oh, yeah, she got fired from that doll.
Yeah, it was seasonal.
The dolls fired her ass. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
So your first, what neighborhood were you in L.A. at first?
I was actually in the neighborhood that we're in now, the mid-Wilshire, like where the studio is, with K-Rock Studios.
Why did you end up there first?
Because Park La Brea was there, and there was a Park Merced in San Francisco, and it was like, oh, that's kind of familiar, like. And my wife at the time, my girlfriend at the time, she was like, my parents lived in Park Merced before they got married. It was their first place. It should be our first place. And then we got there and there was a drug dealer living upstairs. There were roaches everywhere. It was fucking horrible. Me and my wife like fought all the time about why we made that decision and why we should never live there again. We were across the street from a Jack in the Box where there were just bums, you know, every day.
That's right, baby.
So the second time we moved back down here, we moved out in the valley and liked it a lot more.
Park La Brea, at the time it was built, was the largest housing complex in the United States when it was built.
Well, you can tell.
Still one of the biggest.
It was one of those things where they drive you around in a golf cart at the beginning and they're like, look at all the amenities. Right. And you're like, wow, a cafe.
Roaches.
Yeah. Oh my God, the pool. That's exciting. Never went to the pool one time.
Right, right.
Never. Always. What was your first time living in L.A.? When did you
live? I came here big blizzard, New York, 2006.
I got to say something because I rarely say this, but you seem like an L.A. guy to me.
Really?
Like I get the New York. I would have not guessed D.C., but I get – but I'm like –
when he complains that it's 52 degrees outside, I also think he must have been born and raised in L.A.
Yeah,
you live on the East Coast?
I start shivering when it dips below 70 now. Okay.
It's like, my car has the snowflake symbol.
Yeah. These guys will attest. I wear gloves when it's under 70.
Yeah.
True story.
I moved out here as a big blizzard in 2006 in New York, and I said, I got to get to L.A., and I came out here.
Did you graduate Syracuse?
Graduated. Was grinding out. Crap radio jobs on the East Coast.
Was Syracuse dope, by the way?
Syracuse is a great school. A lot of fun. I got the last years of Donovan McNabb, who turned out to be a great NFLer, and then I got the first year of Carmelo Anthony. Wow. So I got a good little.
And they won he won a title as a freshman.
Won a
right?
championship while I was there. So it was a great like little run in Syracuse.
You went for like their broadcasting, blah blah blah.
Most people. My theory was if I went to the school known for broadcasting, people would assume that I was qualified to be a broadcaster. So I went to the school, but I never got into the broadcasting school because you had to be smart or you had to wake up early on a Saturday and take a spelling test. So I never did that. So I just would tell people vaguely, oh, I went to Syracuse and I want to work in broadcasting. And then they would go, wow, this guy must be smart. And I was able – but I was in the class with all the athletes, which was a sub-major called speech communication for the people that weren't smart enough to do the mass communication.
Okay. Lesson one, two-syllable words.
Yeah. So speech comm, we called it, if we couldn't get the whole syllables out. I got offered a job out here to basically help Playboy launch a radio station on satellite.
Yeah.
And I had just broken up with my girlfriend in New York. I said, seems like a good place to go. Moved to L.A., didn't know anyone here.
Wow.
Figured it out, drove around, looked at open for rent signs. You know, we didn't realize how many people in L.A. will let you like live in their pool house. Like there's just all these places. It was a very strange, weird experience just looking for your first place
to live. Had you been here before?
No, I've never been here.
Wow.
Okay. Never been here. Came out and I just like within – and people told me, they're like, in L.A., you'll either like realize after a day or two you love it or you hate it. And I just like right away, I was like, this is awesome. Like, I just loved everything. I loved the energy. I loved the vibe. I was like, I could figure this out. It was nice outside. I love the fact that
so people, opposite. You guys opposite. Had the yeah, opposite.
Very
the opposite.
First time I really hated it.
Where'd you end up living?
I ended up living, coincidentally, not that far from her. I was because everyone tells you you don't know L.A. They're like,
oh, just go in the middle.
Yeah, there's an area called the Grove. Live kind of near there, and you'll figure it out from there. You know,
follow
and
the Frank Sinatra music.
I didn't know it. Yeah. So I was at a place called the Broadcast Center. Which I got woken up. They didn't tell me this when I got the apartment.
Did you think that was a job?
I thought it was a job. I was like, I accept your job.
They're going to think I broadcast if and, I live in the broadcast.
I'll keep fooling people. And then it was, I didn't realize, but it's right, the window of my bedroom was right where the line for Price is Right would line up. So I would wake up, and I was getting up early anyway for my job, but I would be woken up every single day by people that were practicing, celebrating, being on Price is Right. So every day I would wake up to like, oh, it's $88, yeah! And I would be like, shut the fuck up! And the line went right next to my window, and it was every day, because they
shoot. Was like Television City? Is that what we're talking about?
They shoot it. They shot it right there on Fairfax, and like right there on that.
I think that was called Television City.
Yeah, like whatever they call it, that big lot. Yeah, CBS Studios, right there, Fairfax and
is it still there?
Beverly, that's still there. So I don't know what they shoot there now, but it's still there. So I would hear that line of people for a year, and it was a great way, and also a terrible way to wake up every day. And then went from there, met my girlfriend within my first year of living in LA, got married, or moved in with her, and here we are now. However many years later this is, married with a couple of kids. So
okay, get back to us, meaning you're us.
My most important female in my life.
You said you found her. The Playboy satellite radio job. Right.
Titties right. brought us together.
How was that the discovery? How did the discovery in the first meeting and all that?
I was at Playboy for a while. I've been there 8 years, and I knew I was getting married, and I was like, I think I need to grow up a little bit in life, and being around naked people all day was a lot of fun, but I was also, pushing 30. So I was like, I got to grow up a little bit. And I would always wanted to figure out the right move back into radio if it was like the right station and the right time. And the company thought they liked me, and they were like, we have a couple of options for you. We have a station in Dallas. We have a station in San Francisco, or any of these cities of interest to you. And I was like, I like LA. And they're like, well, if you can make anything happen in San Francisco, there'll probably be a chance for you to prove yourself in LA. And I go, all right. At the time, San Francisco was kind of exciting. Like Twitter had just started and all this stuff was happening. It was like the tech boom. So I was like, all right, let me figure that out. So they said, you need to put a show together. And so I had kind of for like a few months, I just had my ears. I was just listening for people, but I didn't want to find people in radio because I thought radio people had a lot of bad habits. So I was trying to find people that had never worked in radio to build a radio show. And
what do you mean by bad habits?
Like lazy stuff that they had just been – radio kind of in some ways became people just impersonating other things they had heard on radio. So it was like you end up hearing the same – like for instance, Ryan's Roses is a stupid bit that happens in L.A. On Ryan, but it happens in every market in another – every – Tom's got his – Tom's Carnations in Dallas.
Our producer, John, was literally saying this right before the show we were talking about the copycat.
It's all fake and it's actors and I didn't want that. But a lot of people work in radio – that's what they think radio is. And I didn't want that. I wanted to be authentic. I wanted to be real. And so I was listening and I heard, I guess Allie had submitted a podcast or some sort that she was, or she was doing a pod. All I heard was her voice. And I remember thinking, I liked the way that she said word. Like I thought she had a funny delivery of words. And then
you were a voiceover person for a while, right? Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I did some video games, commercials. I did some stuff for Pixar, like voice match stuff.
Was it natural or did it take a lot of training?
No, it was natural because I just I had come out to San Francisco and I had gotten a regular talent agent, and then they happened to have a voiceover department and they were like, we think you'd be really good for voiceover. So I just started doing it then,
She told a story I heard on this. The first thing was a story she was telling about trying to seduce her girlfriend by filling a bathtub full of rose petals, but the bathtub
She didn't buy
nearly enough rose petals, and the bath was cold by the time she got there. So it was just her sitting in like a cold bathtub. And I just remember hearing the story and being like, I like the way she tells a fucking story. I wonder if she would be interested in moving. And then I found out after the fact, she was from San Francisco. Yeah. And for me, I was like, this solves a lot of problems for me because I'm moving up there. I don't know. So I was like, great. So I basically said, I met her at Alfred Coffee on Melrose Place. Okay. And I said,
we were talking about getting Alfred's on the way here.
We were talking about getting Alfred's here.
Brings us together.
I don't think we've had it together
right
since.
Down the street.
I know. Yeah. And I said, I said, you interested in doing a show I'm launching in San Francisco? We had a comedian, Brad Williams, who now has gone on to bigger and smaller things since then. but he was like our third, and we were kind of building this radio show. And pretty quickly, Brad realized he missed doing stand-up comedy. Because that the hours of morning radio suck way worse than stand-up comedy.
Well, and he still had to go do like open mics and shit like that.
Because like
that's just how. So he would. He would have late nights and then do.
But you weren't interested. Hold on, I'm not cutting you off. But Ali, you weren't interested in radio, or you weren't like.
She was interested in a paycheck.
I was interested in any consistent work in the entertainment industry and not serving tea to dolls.
All right.
That's what I was interested in. Well, I mean, the fact that I was going to get a regular job. Like any time for an actor, it's like, okay, even if you get a job, you have it for a short period and then you're back to square one. You have to go find another fucking job. And like a lot of my friends are still actors and it's really tough. It's a struggle. It's a grind. And so just the idea of having anything that had a salary or a regular paycheck was like, oh my God, yes. Like I could use that right now. And even then in the back of my mind, I was like, but I'll still do acting. I'll still do voiceover. I'll still do theater. I'll do all this like comedy stuff. And then I remember even just showing up at the same time every day was weird to me.
Yeah.
Like I was like, whoa, this is soul sucking. Just showing up at the same time every single day, the same place and being on like corporate emails and shit like that was like wild to me. Yeah. Now I've gotten in line. But
she's learned her place.
You seem like a radio natural. That's why it's so funny to me because you're good. And I guess it comes from being yourself. Like,
but I think it also comes from improv background, you know, being able to listen and respond and just kind of play in a place, but also you're being yourself, which was weird because I was constantly learning to be characters and different people beyond myself. I didn't really ever think that just me was interesting.
It's not.
But like just being yourself, but also in kind of this elevated animated way. I don't know. It just didn't really seem like it was something that I would be good at, but it just,
I learned pretty quickly, like stuff that normally people wouldn't admit out loud because it would be embarrassing or it would like make them look like bad people. She would say it. And I was like, oh, I like the fact she doesn't have a filter. Like, did she realize she shouldn't be saying this? Like,
it's great.
Like, she would say it. And I was like, is she aware that these mics are on and people are hearing this? And I was like, I'm not going to tell her. I'll just let her keep going. And then it was, and it became fun. And then, you know, look, I probably spent more time probably over the course of my entire life conversing with Ali over anyone at this point. I mean, we've been together now on air in different incarnations for 10 years plus over a decade.
Yeah, it's weird looking back now.
And it's
but you had all the expertise of like the actual radio industry and like, you know,
how many years had he been in at that point?
Well, I think you had already been doing it for 10 years.
Wow.
So it was so like, I just looked at Klein like, okay, he's the one, like he is the guy who knows what's going on. I just am going to listen to him and do whatever he says, but also, you know, be myself and learn my own voice and things like that.
And she started getting all equality, put my name on the show. And all this stuff.
Individuality and things like that. But I think also you and I have a similar sense of humor. We have a similar way of generating ideas. So it was also stuff behind the scenes that I think it just kind of gelled well.
You said you always wanted to be a radio, right?
Always.
Okay. Is it because of the voice?
It's funny. I don't remember this voice. Like, I'll meet people and they'll be like, oh, you're working radio. Oh, I figured you got a voice link.
Yeah.
I don't know what, because you got a similar sort of like, you got that gravitas sort of thing. And I don't know if you got big balls or what, but like, it feels, I don't remember ever not having this voice, but.
They found old tapes of mine
when I was like, and apparently
he's
I was
like, hey, it's Kevin Klein with VH1. What's up, guys?
yeah, that's an uncanny impression. So
what was your out again? It was like,
I'm OTFD, which
out the
I'm,
fucking door.
Yeah, that was my way of being cool. So the answer is I don't know. I got in trouble a lot as a kid. I was always pushing boundaries. I spent a lot of time in my room. I didn't have a TV in my room. So all I had was radio. Like, that was my thing. So I remember thinking years and years of being grounded and in trouble and hearing people like telling stories on the, like, it felt there was something about that where I was like, this seems like if this is a real job, like, that seems cool. So I always just kind of decided that would be, and I guess I decided early on that's what I would do. And I said, trust me, in 2026, it'll be a booming industry. That's what I know.
But I think Klein also thrives on unpredictability, yeah. and radio is such a place of unpredictability. And that's one thing that I've learned to really love about it is it's the same as improv, right? Like, you never know what is going to happen. And every single day, even if it's sort of planned, things go off the plan very quickly.
Anybody
could call and interact with anything at any moment, and things could take a turn. Things could get real. Things could get serious. We've had people call in that were like, you know,
suicidal.
It's just like a completely, it's just like an open play, an open world where
we've gone
anybody.
From like laughing about something ridiculous to all of a sudden we're crying because Allie couldn't get pregnant to like laughing about some ridiculous whatever. And then, you know, we've had even just the last month. I mean, we rescued a dog the other day on the way to work, mid-Wilshire, ended up getting the dog back to its people.
My wife's car got stolen.
What the fuck?
As you know, it's been a crime in the valley these days, Evan. And a car got stolen, and listeners in real time tracked it down, like just by like, I had like rough coordinates, but I didn't know really where it was. Listeners were calling in. I think this may be it. Then they barricaded it till we were able to get someone there. I mean, a great story. The story got picked up.
That can only happen on the radio.
Yeah. Like live, real stuff.
And that's just stuff that you thrive on. Like things that you just never know what's going to happen. Or, yeah, there's a plan, but what opportunity do we have to elevate things?
It's like, I love Costco. A lot of people don't like Costco. It's too much for them. It's overwhelming.
Yeah, that's me.
I love Costco because I go in there and I go, there's chaos in here. Yeah. Anything could happen at any moment.
Yeah.
I don't know what
it's
random.
Always the end of days.
Yeah, forklift is going to bring something in here. Who knows? And like, I love that world. But I know other people are like, I have a panic attack.
I can't even go to the parking lot.
That's like my happy place because I'm like, it's so many possibilities.
Yeah, and it's funny because Omar, who's on our show, and he was on in the Kevin and Bean days as a production guy, he's like, God, I never thought that you guys would operate this way, because he was so used to Kevin and Bean, which is a very – everything was very planned. Very – like the as soon as 11 o'clock rolled around from the previous day, the entire show was mapped out, and it would be –
That sounds amazing.
Or it would be like days in advance, hey, Omar, we want you to put this intro together. And then Klein could be like, hey, Omar, we have 2.5 minutes. Can you make a quick intro for this thing, this bit that we just thought of 30 seconds ago? Yeah. And he's like, this is a complete 180. It took him a lot to get used to that, because that's just how more we work. And
okay, let's talk about radio right now. And I think one thing that – an undertone here.
That's a tune-out sentence, right?
Why both you guys thrive and are good at it, though, is because it's intimate, right? It's like there's something where the listener knows you, or they feel like they know you, all this kind of stuff. Oh, yeah, because the podcast as well, right? Because the podcast as well.
Live on YouTube.
Pump the podcast.
Klein Alley Show, wherever you get your podcasts. It's like LA in a minute, just for longer minutes. then we are also live on YouTube every day, so people can watch. You know, guys like you made it seem easy. So then guys like us that were, you know, excited to wear a hat every day and not have to shave, have to try to be respectful.
Now
Allie has to shave. She used to have a sweet goatee. So now we're live on YouTube, and you know, it's, you got to go where the people are.
It's the intimacy that drives radio, right?
Of course.
And that's why I think radio is still around. Like, it used to be everything. Then it became a forgotten medium, but it's sort of like settled. And again, I don't see the behind the scenes ratings, but it feels like there are radio loyalists, like, you know, whether it's satellite radio, terrestrial radio, news radio, you know, shout out KNX, by the way, a good partner of mine and Odyssey brand. But what is it about radio for you guys that gets you excited every day that you guys?
Well, I think they say that even now there are more people listening to the radio than ever.
Yeah.
Before.
Right.
That's
why they brainwash us every day. And we say, yes, sir, whatever you
say. And
that's
why,
why isn't it making more money?
Well, that's why LA is a great city for you guys, because we're always in cars.
People
are always listening to radio, especially in the morning hours. Is that intimacy the driver for you guys? Is it each other? What is it that keeps you guys excited and motivated?
I think the fact that people know what they are hearing is happening live and in the moment is a big part of it.
And local, too,
right? We are in LA when we're talking about being on the Allie probably didn't want to bring this up on your show, but she recently self-pleasured on the 101 freeway
because she started
taking testosterone and she couldn't control herself and her phone went off in her lap.
Is that why you guys did the testosterone?
That's why we did the testosterone.
Okay. That's true. Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, the point is that we're talking about real, we're talking about real streets. And by the way, the amount of people that called and said what streets they do that on is wild. We're not safe.
Oh my God, people were like, "Thank you for raising awareness." I was like, "What?"
Someone's like, "I'm a Sepulveda Pasco."
Everyone's like, just fucking jacking themselves.
But apparently, the point is this: like, I think people like hearing. You know, when we talk about play, I talk about a place. I got a great sandwich recently. They're like, oh, I know that place. You know, yeah. People like
where,
it.
Where?
About, I mean, where haven't I gotten a good sandwich recently? I was bragging about the one. Well, today I'm not going to get a lot of respect for the one I got. I couldn't believe
it. Sprouts?
I couldn't believe the size of the sandwich I got at Sprouts for $4.99.
Sprouts blew, is underrated.
The sandwich. Like Sprouts, so people tell me, they go, the sandwich place? $4.99. This sandwich is massive. It would have been a $20 sandwich anywhere else. I was shocked by it. But
everybody was walking in today. Hey, John. How much do you think this sandwich was? This was half of the sandwich. Imagine two times of this sandwich. Yeah, how much do you think it was?
That's an off-air conversation. We didn't share that on the air. We saved that for your show.
Omar, it's a sandwich.
I did ask everyone to guess the price of the sandwich, but $4.99. It's good to know it still lives in 2026. But like, I think people like, look, as people say all the time, they say to us, we feel like you're like my good friends, but you don't know me at all. But they know everything about us. Like they know when I'm fighting with my wife, when my kids are misbehaving, when I'm getting in trouble. Like they know that if I'm going through medical health stuff, or my daughter, like it's not all sad stuff. We do happy stuff on the show too. But
that kind of sounds like a bummer.
Our show something that resonates. If it bleeds, it leads.
But I mean, it's the bottom line is like people know all the stuff about us, and then we don't know that much about them, and then we meet them, and they're like, it's so weird. It's like meeting a good friend of mine that I've never met before.
Yeah,
and we hear that a lot. But I think that's the intimacy part of it, right? Is that people are in their cars, and we like the fact that now we've got people that listen together. We're about to. Help a couple get married, and they met, I think, as a result of our show, right? One of them liked the show, turned the other one on the show. Now the show is what they talk about at the end of the day. And that's the part that, like, it feels all quaint and old school, like people sitting around the radio listening to their stories. Yeah. But in some ways, if you're doing it well and you're doing it, you know, for a modern audience, it still works because people, I think you have a captive audience there, especially sitting in LA and not moving.
Yeah. I also think that the one thing I love about radio is the ability to connect with people that you wouldn't normally connect with. Like somebody that you would walk by on the street and not give the time of day, you can hear their story and get to know them on the radio. Like we have so many weird characters that are friends of the show. We have One Arm Gary. We have Secondhand Cindy. We have Pantyhose Greg. We have Big Chocolate the Toe Sucker. I mean, these are all just people that have called into the station and have fascinating lives. And you would probably walk by Pantyhose Greg sitting outside a 7-Eleven and not think twice about it. But you can, on your way to work, hear from somebody like that and get a glimpse into what their life is like. And they have no filter and they want to tell their story. And that's a platform where you can do that, right? So I really like the ability to get to know so many different types of people in one place.
That's a great, honestly, and that kind of resonates with me for LA in a minute. As a saying, even though I'm doing the stories, but the people that I'm able to meet through that, where you're like, dude, everybody, and I always say, like, from Sylmar to San Pedro, from Wilmington to Woodland Hills, Pacoima to Palisades, you know, like,
and that's what our phone line looked like. That's what's
so
cool.
Alliteration,
but that's like, well, I look at the phones and I'm like, oh, this is so cool that we're going to like hear whatever the topic is, right? And it's a woman from Pacoima,
like Covina, Thousand Oaks,
and I just love it. And it feels like we're all part of this kind of, especially now with like everything feeling so uncertain and just the world, that whole general kind of sense of like, what is anyone? It feels nice to like have a community.
Yeah.
And I always thought that K-Rock did that so well. They kind of created a culture and people were a part of that culture. And now it feels like it's back and, you know, the argument's being made like is stronger than ever, which is kind of crazy to think if we're sitting here in 2026 talking about it.
I think it's true because it's the only station that has been a stalwart for that long. Other stations have been around, but K-Rock does have a culture. If you're a K-Rock person, you can, I don't say make assumptions, but you kind of know a little bit about that person. Right. And like, it really means something, especially in LA. I do want to talk from a corporate sense for a sec. Kevin Weatherly is a name that always comes up. What is the genius behind Kevin Weatherly? Like,
luck.
He saved the day, but he was also one of the original like ones who made K-Rock what it is. What's his deal? Why does he know so well? Why is he so valuable to K-Rock and Odyssey?
You know, it's interesting. When I first moved to LA, my goal was to meet the, I heard this name, Kevin Weatherly, as like this guy's a star maker, because at the time he made Adam Carolla, Jimmy Kimmel, Carson Daly, all these guys that made their way through K-Rock and went on to bigger and better things. Yeah. And he was the guy that, like, if he gave you the tap, you were like off to the, you know, your career. So I was like, I got to meet this guy, Kevin Weatherly. And I finally met him, and I was very underwhelmed when I met him. But I said,
don't meet your heroes.
Yeah, don't ever meet your heroes, kids. That's the lesson. No, I think the thing that he does better than anyone, because we've had bosses that have micromanaged everything we say and do, he's great at finding.
There was always tell of what is a good program director
right.
like.
Well, yeah, we never knew, because we'd always have these guys that every time the ratings would go up a little bit or down a little bit, would make these like drastic changes.
Yeah.
And Weatherly's a guy that just always surrounded himself with people that he's like, these are good quality people, and now I'm just going to let them do what they do, and I'm going to be hands off. And like, he was the guy that created the original kind of what K-Rock was. And I think he lucked out, because when he did that, Nirvana happened to be the biggest band in the world. It was just the right music hit at the right time, and he got a lot of credit for it. But when he went away, when he left, you know, things fell apart quickly, because all the things he had built kind of got dismantled. And the culture was the first thing that went. And once culture went, everything else followed. Man. And he came back, and as soon as he came back, the culture was back, the bands. I mean, there's very few people in the world that so you hear like these bands that will mention Coldplay, Linkin Park, that bands
Gwen
that
Stefani.
Will say, I wouldn't have had a career. No one would know who we were if it was not for this guy, Kevin Weatherly, that heard our songs and said, you know what, I'll put it on in LA. And then they still believe to this day that he's the reason they're anything.
That's awesome.
And so as a result, when we, you know, when we need a favor, we want to bring a busload of listeners over to Chris Martin's house for an intimate performance in his living room. These things happen.
Those relationships are ingrained.
And you know, when Gwen Stefani is telling stories about it, she used to send K-Rock cookies every day and say, please,
please
play my music. Here's cookies, play my music. And finally, he ate enough cookies that he had to play No Doubt. and so it's like, this is what kind of matters now. And so he's I mean, I would love to say he gave us great advice or helped our show get good, but the best thing he did was just left us alone.
Yeah, but that's, I think, what makes him so strong is that he is not a reactive guy. He can go by his gut. He can also, he's obviously good with numbers, and he's good with, you know, figuring out a formula and a plan, but he's also confident enough to make a decision and say, I trust this decision, and to let things breathe. And I think that comes with decades of experience, but also that's just how he is. Like, he goes with his gut, and he trusts himself, and he trusts and he surrounds himself with smart people, and he listens to, you know, the perspectives and takes from others when he's not sure about something. But ultimately, he's very confident, and I think that is a huge quality in a good program director for any radio station. But he also just knows the identity of K-Rock. He knows what makes K-Rock K-Rock. And when he's listening to any song or hearing a personality or whatever, he knows, is this right for this scene?
And I'll give him credit, which I don't do a lot, but he when they brought him back to K-Rock, they said, what do you want to do about the morning problem? We were called the morning problem. And he said, what are you talking about? And you go, well, the mornings are a disaster. We had to figure this out. Yeah. You can pretty much have whatever you need. Who do you want? You know, figure it out. You want to get Joe, you want to offer Joe Rogan money to come in here and do more? They just said, what do we need to do to get the mornings right at K-Rock? And he said, I'm sticking with Klein Alley. And they were like, why? And he's like, I'm sticking with the show. He's like, the show makes me laugh. I think it's a good show. It's going to take time for people to figure it out, because they're doing it differently. But once they do, you will see the reward. And that was like him against, that was him, maybe the only person that had the power to say that and have people listen. And he did that for us. And now it's nice. You know, we just had a call like last Friday where he's like, hey, you know, you guys number one again, and you know, you're moving further and further ahead now with everyone behind you. And I always knew I'd be able to make these calls. I was hoping they would have happened a bit sooner, but still they're happening now. And
but it's not to say he didn't listen to other shows.
Right. He did listen. Yeah,
I listened to what else was out there. Yeah, and I also took advice from a bunch of other PDs around the country, blah, 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 in other markets. And this is the best decision.
On Aspire with Emma Greed, I sit down with people who don't just dream big, they build big. From Mark Cuban to Mel Robbins, we talk about mindset, ambition, and the work that actually moves the needle. Listen to Aspire with me, Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now.
Were you guys ever worried at one point that you're like, today could be the last day, or the
I feel
end
like now
nigh?
I think that all the time. Like, I just think that this industry, not maybe not
the
right
first month,
this,
I haven't felt that way
in this moment.
Jesus Christ!
But I think that I have prepared myself for this industry. Is just a brutal industry.
Yes.
You never fucking know what's going to happen. So I still to this day barely have anything at my desk because I don't want to clear anything out of my desk.
Yeah, the first time she decorated her desk, she like spent, she came in on a weekend and decorated her desk, put up a bunch of plants and pictures and stuff. I think like the next day we got fired. I was like, Allie, you cannot decorate.
Wow.
Nothing. Everything has to be able to grab and go in a second. But the most recent time I was convinced we were done was the day they brought Kevin Ryder back because they didn't tell us. Everything was real weird. There was like quiet stuff. And then we, the second we got off
closed
the air,
door meeting.
Yeah, I was like, come in, sit down.
The second we walk out of the studio, they're like, you guys got a minute to talk, which never good. In a relationship, not good. And then we're like, sure. And then we see one boss. Then as we walk down the hallway, the other boss kind of comes down his hallway. And I was like, he's like, oh, you guys ready for the meeting now? And we're like, we didn't know about this meeting. So, and
we were like, did we just do our last show?
Then they sit us down in the chair. Then they close the door. So it's all, and we've been through this enough before that I was like, oh, here we go. I was like, literally started to text my wife. I'm like, need a job. and they're like, so just so you guys know, we're going to announce it later today, but Kevin Ryder's coming back. And we're like, well, you probably made the right call. Thanks for letting us give it a shot.
Yeah.
I think we're like, great. That's the, and they're like, no. They're like, did we not tell you it's afternoons? You guys are fine. We're like, wow.
Like, Ryder doesn't want to do mornings anymore.
Yeah.
Like, so you asked him.
Yeah. Yeah. We offered him. He doesn't want to wake up early anymore. So,
but what was nice was that Ryder was happy to come back to K-Rock and also happy to be doing the day part that he's doing. And we've had him on the show, and we had one of the first times we had him back on was to, we had a lie detector guy in studio that gave Kevin Ryder a lie detector test. We talked about all this stuff that happened like, you know, decades ago on Kevin and Bean. And, you know, I think it was really important for people that got picked because when Kevin and Bean got fired, it was fucked up.
It
that was part of the real, one of the many mistakes was them being fired the way that, well, Kevin Ryder being fired the way that he was
over
after
the phone
30 years.
Or something, right? Was it?
Yeah. And then escorted out of the building. And again, no chance to grab your stuff. Like it's very humiliating, especially for someone who put that many years in. So to have him come back and to come on our show, and we still have him on. We had him on last Friday, and we do a bit called a bit reboot with Kevin Ryder, where he gives us an old bit from Kevin and Bean that we remount and see if it has legs. And so it's a nice full circle moment to kind of nod to the old K-Rock and give Ryder the credit that he deserves, and also
Sweet.
Still move forward to a new K-Rock.
That's awesome of you guys. Okay, I want to start wrapping up, and this is out of place, but I do got to get back. What is the Christmas Eve firing story? How did that happen?
We were on in San Francisco, and I thought we were doing well.
We were doing well.
We got the numbers up, and they were talking about, like, we were going to make a calendar for us. We took a bunch of pictures for a calendar, which anytime the station spends any money, you feel safe at least for a little bit.
Yeah.
So we're like, we just took pictures for this calendar, so I think we're all right.
They wouldn't take the pictures.
And they're like, well, why'd they take pictures? I mean, we took pictures and stuff, you know?
And we had our Christmas concert, and the new, this was during the merger.
Yeah, Allie put on Rouge.
Yeah. And then the new boss like got drunk and talked to us about how she loves Live 105
and loves the show. And it was almost like they were being too nice. And then I think I found out that my wife was pregnant with our second daughter. So I was like, oh, this is good. I'm like, things are going well. And then we got a call.
We had just finished our last show of the year.
And we were like, we didn't really take any time off because we were so afraid that if we ever went off the air, that people would find other shows. So we were just like, we would work until we'd like, we're doing our last show Christmas Eve morning.
Oh, yeah, we would do Christmas Eve shows all the time.
And then they called me at like noon and they're like, hey, we're not going to be needing you guys moving forward. I was like, you mean like for Christmas or forever? They're like, yeah, forever. And then, and I couldn't get in touch with Allie. I think she was sleeping.
I had taken it. It was like the post show into winter break nap.
Christmas.
The best nap.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. I'm going to take a nap. And then I woke up to a voicemail from my boss.
Yeah,
and then
boss.
I called him back and he was like, I'm sorry, I'm going to give you information on Cobra Insurance. And I was like, what?
Cobra. I want to tell you about Cobra.
And then I talked to you.
Yeah.
And then and then it was also like kind of a gag order. It was like, but you also can't tell anybody that this happened. And you also can't get into the building to get our shit. Yeah. And then we had to find a current employee to get our stuff and bring it out of the building. And then we were trying to even get access to previous shows so that we could have archives of our own show. And they were wouldn't let us.
But
get
I
that.
Told Allie, I said, "Don't worry, we're good. We'll figure it out." And within a few months, we had been hired again at a radio station in San Diego, and then we got fired before we went on the air the first day.
Yeah, what was that?
Well, yeah. That was
a stunt, right?
It was a tweet. Okay. In San Francisco, I think they have a slightly better sense of humor, but we put up a picture of the Golden Gate Bridge and we wrote the words jump to a new morning show. And the idea is that we were sitting in bridge traffic. You should jump to a new morning show. We decided in San Diego, that'll play just as well. So we tried it with their bridge and they didn't have the same sense of humor about it. So
especially because there was like a military aspect. And but we didn't really know any of that. And then when we got hired, they were like, we want you to be edgy. We want you to make waves. We want you to. And we were like, well, let's do something that's going to be a little controversial, but it'll get people talking and that. And it was like that. And then all of a sudden it started taking off.
Yeah, it was like the biggest story on all the local news. We by the night before our first show, we're like, this is great. We've never had, and they were like,
did they know about the Golden Gate Bridge one? That was way worse. No one said shit about that.
And all the bosses are like high fiving us and being like, yes, it's the best exposure we've ever gotten. And this, and then like somehow it all like turned overnight. We're like, all right, we're here to do our first show. Like, we're going to take a pause on that.
Yeah. And it was like a day or two in, they were like, don't worry guys, we got your back. Yeah. And then like 2 days after that, they were like, we can't move forward.
Yeah, we don't got your back anymore.
Because the Padres got involved and they were partners with the station.
Always hated
and
the
they
Padres.
Were like, we will not, they were going to pull out of their deal if we were still on the air.
Yeah.
Wow, so, that bad.
Yeah.
San Diego's weird. I always say the only city I'd live in outside LA is San Diego, but it's different though. It's laid back, it's chill, it's cool, it's beautiful. All those things are true. But it's still different. I don't even want to call it conservative, quote unquote.
But it can be. There's a big mixed group because it's college city, but then there's also very heavy military presence. So there's a lot of different eclectic groups all in one place.
That's LA though.
I know. So I'm frustrated because I think we would have done really well. I know we would have done well there. And look, I think that, I don't know. LA is always going to be home to K-Rock. I think the Klein Alley show, I believe this year is going to start expanding into other cities.
Yes.
Because it's
fucking segue to my next question was what's next for a Klein Alley show? Yeah, literally.
I just think that we have, we look back at like our podcast is being downloaded a lot and we see that we have, they put the show on for very limited time in places like Dallas. We still have listeners that hit us up daily from Dallas and Boston and Arizona,
Canada,
and Vegas and Canada. So like, I think that realistically, at the end of the day, just like I'm sure, you did this show thinking it was going to be an LA show for LA people. And now you've learned that there's tons of people that don't live in LA that love every, and you're like, why would they care about this bush that I found in Riverside? That was the first,
They care about the parrots.
Yeah. They care about the parrots, but they care about you and but they like the stories. Right. And that's where like you start going, like, I love the fact that we do an LA show. We will always do an LA show, but I think that's a show that can be easily consumed by people in other cities as well, because we're just real people living our lives, young kids and struggles and even the makeup of our show, the cast of characters between Jake the Nerd and Postmaster Johnny and Vanessa. And, I think between the group that we've assembled now, we do cover most of everyone.
Yeah. And I think also expanding beyond radio too, because now there's so many different ways that people consume media. So it's like, there's terrestrial radio. That's always going to come first for us. But also, like Klein said, our podcast, our YouTube live stream, our social media, all these different ways that we can reach. Oh, yeah. And we're on TaskRabbit. We will do TaskRabbit stuff as well.
You got a loose vanity? Hit us up.
But, it's also... Yes, the ratings are good. If it ever turns, then we also have our social media, which is always growing. We always have new people that we're reaching in every single different platform that we possibly can. So anybody who's consuming media has to be able to find us. And that's, I think, the goal is to go beyond all of it.
But our real goal is to get on LA in a minute. I'll tell you why. And by the way, just to get on your podcast period, because Ali and I do get asked to go on a lot of podcasts, and for the most part, we're like, we do 4 hours of radio a day.
I know,
like the last, and by the way, as you know, like when you're interviewing experts, like you're interviewing like, the dog expert you had on the other day, you're talking to Rick Caruso, like you're talking to people that you have a
fucking
lot.
Fucking guy who invented the internet is coming on next week.
Right. These are real people.
Wow.
It's always weird to interview people that interview people because you're like, what am I going to like talk to? Whenever we get pitched, because we'll get pitched like podcasters on our show, and we're like, that's really weird. Like, what are we kind of doing? It's weird. It feels like incestuous almost in a weird way. But like, we were always thinking, and you know me, because I probably harassed you more than a few times over the years to be like, when are we going to be big enough to get on with you? And you're like, I forget. There's a few. I should read all the excuses he's texted me over the years. There's a few good ones.
All the R-rated bits we wanted you to do.
That's right.
I forgot about that.
That was so funny.
I was wondering if that would come up.
He did send you a very R-rated bit. You're like, I can't do that. I forgot what it was, but it was fun at the time.
I think I probably still have it in my email draft.
Jeff Fetterman, thank you, by the way, my guy. I got to give him a shout out. He had my back on that one. So he's been great.
But, he said, don't do it?
Well, he was like, hey, I trust whatever your decision. He's you don't need to. I'm not going to force you to do anything you're not feeling comfortable with.
No. You're a family friendly guy.
Yeah, I try. At least on air.
Yeah. We hate our families.
Yeah.
But
that's correct.
Any news on Kelly Turner, new CEO of Odyssey, by the way? What do we expect over there? Odyssey, by the way, owns K-Rock.
It's weird because I don't even know anymore who owns us. It's been through so many changes. We feel like divorced children that have been passed around. But
she's not a radio person.
No, she's not a radio person. So she comes in with a totally different.
And she's a New Yorker, isn't she?
Two strikes.
Or East Coast. She does have kind of like a no bullshit. Approach to things, which you kind of appreciate.
Yeah.
And you're like, is AI going to take our jobs? And she's like, I'm not saying no. You're like, okay.
Is AI funnier than you? Because if it is.
She's like, make yourself irreplaceable then.
Yeah.
If you don't want me to replace you.
I think
you.
From what I've heard, and we've only been through, I think, one meeting because all that stuff's way above us. But I like anyone who's like, because that's how we try to look at morning radio. Like, how do we do it differently? And I feel like she's looking at the business and going, how do we do this differently to make sense as a business?
Because there are
more people consuming audio than ever before now. Yeah. And you just have to make that audio something that people actually want to consume and then figure out. And one of the things I think she's done that's been really smart, for a while, K-Rock was very, like, it made it harder to find it. They wanted everyone to be listening on K-Rock or on the Odyssey app.
And they're like, the app.
And then they're like, but there's all these millions of people out there that are listening on Spotify and listening on iHeart. And she's like, great, then put our content where all the people are.
Yeah.
And that's
meet people where they are.
Right. Yes. Meet people where they are, which is smart.
Force them to download the fucking Odyssey app.
Right. So now we have people listening to us on all these other platforms as well, which is good for them, good for us. So, I feel like that's just good thinking right there. Like, so I'm not going to, I wish I had bad things to say about her too, but I don't know enough yet, but I will.
I'll come back.
Fair. All right. Closing out. One of my classic segments is One Thing to Do in LA This Weekend. Not meaning this weekend coming up particularly, but Ali, if you have a free weekend, what are your favorite things to do? What neighborhoods do you like to explore? It can be, listen, we've had people say, I want to sit on my fucking porch and drink coffee and look out into my fucking neighbor's front yard.
Well, there's a couple things that we do local to where we are. Cause I live in Agora Hills, Thousand Oaks area. And
do you consider Agora Hills the Valley, by the way, first of all?
I mean, I guess people consider it the exurbs.
What do you, it's like do you consider valley. It the valley? You do?
Yeah, I guess.
Okay, good. I do too.
What else would it be?
It's like getting out there. There's a way to say it's not the valley.
Well, once I hit like Liberty Canyon, you start seeing the hills and you just have this like sense of relaxation. There's hiking everywhere. Yeah. So we would go on a hike. One of our favorite hikes is by Zuma Beach, Sunset Beach area. There's a hike that goes all the way up near Point Doom. Yeah. And then you can get like almost a 360 view of the ocean. It's beautiful. You usually see whales and dolphins and all kinds of stuff. And then there's a sunset restaurant, a little restaurant that you can sit and eat there. That's just a beautiful day. And a lot of times like Zuma is where it's super packed, but then there's a little beach that's kind of next to it that not as many people know about.
Yeah.
So we'll go there and we'll, do the little hike, the loop around, look at some of the nice houses, walk around and then have some lunch and stuff. And it's just a beautiful day. And then there's Cornell. There's a little wine tasting room that's near, there's a place called The Old Place. It has really, really great barbecue kind of tucked away in some of the hills there. So we'll have, some wine and maybe some barbecue.
That's not good.
Yeah.
This is good. I like that area and I'm pro Malibu. I mean, I've always been pro, but more than ever since the fires, and they've been really nice. And their attitude and approach, like, come back to Malibu. Malibu's still open for business. Yeah, all that.
For sure.
Have you been to Malibu Creek State Park?
Yeah.
I
camped there actually not too long ago.
I'm supposed to do a story on it. I've never set foot there knowingly. Always hear about the MASH.
Beautiful.
It's where MASH was filmed and all this kind of stuff. Planet of the Apes, I guess, too. But then, like, I talked to people who run it because it's, a city thing. But I was like, dude, the stream and all this, you're in a different place. You're in a vacation.
You feel like you're kind of taken out of LA. Yeah.
And this is one of the, I was going to say, not to go on my rant, but truthfully, one of the great things about LA is you could go places. I'm just looking at pictures. I'm like, this looks like a vacation. Right. This is like where people would like go as a destination. And we're one freeway ride away.
Oh, yeah. I was camping and feeling away from it all. And I could still hear the freeway. You know, I'm still 10 minutes from my house.
That's Orion's Belt. That's a Honda Civic.
Exactly.
You know, back and forth, you know?
All right, Kevin Klein, what do you do besides go to Sherman Oaks?
Well, Allie's weekend sounded nice. So, yeah, Sherman Oaks Little League. I'm a season ticket holder there. They have a lot right there.
You're always bopping around this area.
I gamble on the kids. I like to start young. It's been a while. I love hitting – I go to the west side, which I know is not cool to do when you live in the valley, but I will try to head over. I like walking around Abbot Kinney area there. There's always a cool restaurant.
Okay, so Venice west side, not Santa Monica west side.
Yeah.
Venice is cool, but
because there's like, you know, lately, you know, I'm always looking for a good bagel, good slice of pizza. I feel like there's always places popping up there that I find like interesting. I think it's great people watching, you know, but realistically, at this point, I feel like I rarely leave the valley. I'm in the valley. Occasionally I'll check. It'll take me like 11 minutes to get somewhere. I'm like, I'm not going there. It's 11 minutes. That is now we're entering into Encino territory. Yeah. And that is too far.
It's funny crossing the 405. That's a very valley thing right here, but it seems so close. Sherman Oaks and Encino are adjacent communities. Look at a map. They are adjacent communities in the valley, which is the suburbs.
Yeah.
But if you're going during rush hour, it could take you 40 minutes. Yeah. And I know because my kid would have baseball practice at both. And I'm like, is that possible?
Before we lived near each other, I lived in Encino and I moved there during COVID. So when I was going there's no cars on the road. And I was like, it's 5 minutes. And then all of a sudden traffic came back and I was like, whoa, I'm so much further than I thought I was. And it got to a point where I was like, I got to move back. And like you look at a map, you're like, the dots are right next to each other.
So close.
But I can't figure it out. And on the street that I lived on, half the street was considered Sherman Oaks and half the street was Encino.
Ooh.
It was like on the street. You should do a story from that street. That's a story right there. Let's get into it.
The Tale of Two Cities.
By the way, quick, bagel pizza. Do you have a favorite or anybody you want to shout out?
Favorite bagel in the valley right now is Hank's probably. I like Layla's Good Bagels. I like the pop-ups that just came from New York City. I like those bagels. Those are good, but they you can wait way too quickly. Pizza. It's a tough one. Sonny's a new in the game. I think they have a good slice. I like a Brooklyn Pizza Wagon as like a New York classic. That's right on Ventura. Just like a cheese classic New York. I think they do it well. And of course, Apollonia always seems to win everything right by the radio station on Mid-Wilshire. It's a great pizza. And then Tudo's, we agree on Tudo's.
Which is Tudo's is in my
her neck of the woods. Tudo's got good slices, two different styles.
What is that? Spell that.
Two different doughs because they have a
they
do a sourdough and then they do a thin one.
Yeah, they have the thin.
Really?
Wait, the thin one is sourdough, right?
I think they do two separate styles of dough there, and one of them they do for like they're like a big kind of style, like Roman style. The other one's like their thin New York style.
Have you ever been to Santino's? Nobody knows Santino's. It's in like on the Sherman Oaks, I guess you'd call it. It's on Woodman, not on Ventura, but off of Ventura. They do this Neapolitan square pizza, very thin. And like, I've never even heard anybody ever talk about
Santino's?
We love it. Santino's. I love it.
Sure.
Neapolitan square, just FYI.
You go to Baroni's?
Yeah, Baroni's was the first pizza ever in the Valley, second pizza ever in Los Angeles.
Baroni's got good old slice.
Do you know Baroni's?
No.
Okay, so my parents used to go there on dates. It's like Van Nuys, Sherman Oaks border. It used to be on Ventura. First pizza in the Valley. It's like this weird or strange. They make it in a sheet pan.
Yeah, tray style.
And the cheese, it's not mozzarella cheese. I want to say it's like pepper jack.
It's like a blend.
It's a different kind of cheese. It tastes weird if you're like expecting pizza. But I mean, it's as OG as it gets. Yeah. And it's a cool like spot. It just feels like that old school 8 years old.
Got to order pepperoni well done there and you get crisp on the top. That's the order of Baroni's. But if we walk in there, you feel like you've gone back in time. It's very
cool.
I feel like they've shot a lot. Whenever they need a scene in an LA movie that's like, this had to take place sometime in the 70s. They're like, shoot it in Baroni's.
Perfect.
Right.
All right. Any last words, Klein?
No, we're a fan of what you do, man. Thank you for being supportive. I was going to say this early on, not that you need your flowers, but I think one of the first public people that actually said anything nice about us when really no one was. You were doing, I think it was a story on like the Almost Acoustic Christmas, or you were doing some K-Rock thing, and you didn't need to, but you like threw in, and also they got a new morning show, Klein Alley. It's pretty funny. Check, like, it was like an unnecessary compliment from you, and it meant the world to us, and you probably don't realize it at the time, but I feel like, you know.
Maybe you were told to say that, but yeah, thank you.
Yeah, but thank you, Jeff Fetterman, for writing that down for him to say. We appreciate it.
No, so in short, the reason you guys are number one is because LA in a Minute then, right?
Yeah, that's right.
LA in a Minute, baby. Yeah.
Dude, you guys keep doing what you're doing. This is an asset to LA because, listen, I've said it again on the show. I'm repeating myself even for the show. K-Rock is important to Los Angeles. It is part of the culture. It has been part of the culture. And you guys are making it part of the culture again. And I'm very glad that you've been rewarded for that hard work and for being at the bottom and rising to the top. And that's where K-Rock deserves to be. And that's where you guys deserve to be.
Yeah, maybe 30 years from now, we can get fired.
Yeah,
baby.
We're a nonprofit, too. You should point that out. We're trying to be, but we're still a nonprofit.
501c3.
All right. Klein Alley. Klein Alley Show on K-Rock. Tune in. Now you can see him on every platform. So we're good to go. Thank you guys for being here. Really, really appreciate it.
All right, LA. It's been a minute.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.